KJAN, Radio Atlantic.
And at 8 o'clock, we have light snow. We picked up about a tenth of an inch so far here at the official weather station for Atlantic. And we look for cloudy skies with light snow today, a high around 30. Good morning. I'm Rick Hansen with KJAN News, brought to you by Cass County Health System, Cass County Memorial Hospital in Atlantic. The Iowa DOT's 511IA.org website shows roads in parts of western Iowa are partially covered with snow this morning, primarily west of the Shelby exit on Interstate 80, and then off to the north along Highway 131 and the up into the Denison area, Logan area, and stretching on down through McClellan and Underwood. And you can expect the road conditions to be partially covered as the day continues to progress. In the news, an official representing the Elite Octane LLC ethanol plant issued a press release Friday saying that the Cass County Board of Supervisors had received an updated proposal from Elite Octane with regard to the construction of an ethanol production facility in Atlantic. Nick Bodish, president and CEO of N. Bodish Company, LLC, said the proposal provides for new infrastructure to be completed in Cass County that will be paid entirely by property taxes generated by Elite Octane. Bodish says that at the completion of the proposed project, Cass County will have an additional 2.5 miles of newly paved roads that should help to facilitate development of the area surrounding the proposed plant. According to Bodish, property taxes generated by Elite Octane's proposed project will also support the installation of a gray water line that will recycle a waste stream the community has traditionally released down the Anishinaabeg River for the past 75 years. The recycling of gray water, he says, is positive from both a water conservation and environmental perspective, but it's also important to the viability of the ethanol facility itself. Recycled gray water, according to Bodish, is an important component in plans for Elite Octane's proposed $190 million investment, which will bring with it 49 long-term high-quality jobs, he says, and local payroll in excess of $3.5 million. While previous proposals had contemplated Cass County carrying a greater share of the project's financial and infrastructure burdens, as neighboring counties have done with ethanol plants in the past, Bodish says Elite Octane's latest proposal contemplates that Cass County taxpayers will not pay for any of the new infrastructure required by the project. They will be entirely funded by Elite Octane's future property taxes. Cass County residents will, he says, however, enjoy the benefits of immediate and certain job growth, as well as a value-added processor for corn grown in the region that he says should drive local farm incomes higher. In addition, Bodish says there will be opportunities for further economic development on the newly paved roads, which again, he says, will be paid for entirely by tax revenues generated from the asset investment Elite Octane proposes to make in Cass County. Bodish says it has always been Elite Octane's intention to pay its own way into Cass County, and the company looks forward to finalizing an agreement with the Cass County Board of Supervisors that will enable it to promptly sign construction contracts, thereby avoiding further delay and risks of labor and material escalation costs, which could potentially delay or even stop the project. Cass County Auditor Dale Sunderman said a public hearing on a development agreement with Elite Octane based on the new proposal will be held during the Board of Supervisors meeting Wednesday beginning at 9 a.m. A Guthrie County farmer's passion for telling the story of Iowa agriculture and his involvement in the community has earned him an award and prizes from the Iowa Farm Bureau Federation. Coon Rapids area farmer Adam Ebert was presented with the Bob Joslin Excellence in Agriculture Award during the IFBF's 98th annual meeting in Des Moines this week. The award, presented by the IFBF, honors a young farmer under 35 who demonstrates outstanding leadership in Farm Bureau, agriculture, and their community. The award is named in recognition of Bob Joslin, IFBF president from 1986 to 87, who was well known for his support and encouragement of young farmers. 6 years ago, Adam Ebert and his wife Mary started farming in Guthrie County, where he and his wife grow corn, soybeans, and hay, in addition to raising hogs and cattle. Ebert also works for the local ISU Extension Office. As the Joslin Award winner, Ebert receives a $1,500 home and workshop certificate from John Deere, the award sponsor. Other prizes, an expense-paid trip to the 2017 American Farm Bureau Federation's annual convention in Phoenix, Arizona, and the 2017 GrowMark annual meeting in Chicago next August. With the holidays approaching, many Iowans are sending and receiving packages. But be warned, a new scam involves an email that claims there's a problem with the package delivery, and the message appears to be from either UPS, FedEx, or the U.S. Postal Service. Jim Hegarty, head of the Better Business Bureau office in Omaha Council Bluffs, says don't be fooled.
Scammers use this time of the year, every year, to send these spoofed emails. They look like they're from legitimate delivery services, but they're designed to download malware into your system, which can cause you all kinds of headaches.
Should you get such an email, report it to your internet service provider and delete it. You can also call the agency to verify there's no problem with your delivery. Hegarty also warns of recent scams on Facebook that appear to be from friends touting federal grant money for people with disabilities. Hegarty says don't accept friend requests on Facebook from people you don't know.
We're in an environment now where this is a venue that's being used very, very consistently to take advantage of people and get access to accounts. So we just have to be super cautious.
The grant scheme recently duped an Omaha-area woman out of more than $2,000. She thought she was following the advice of a friend. Sioux City police have revealed the name of an officer who fatally shot a South Dakota man during a traffic stop, as well as more details of the shooting. A department news release Friday said Officer Dylan Grimsley fatally shot 36-year-old Daniel Anthony Reedman of Dakota Dunes, South Dakota, on Wednesday. The release said during the stop, Grimsley and his partner learned of an arrest warrant for Reedman and a warning that Reedman was considered armed and dangerous. Police say Reedman ignored repeated commands by officers to show his hands and unlock the door of the SUV in which he was a passenger. Police say Reedman was shot when he reached for something inside the vehicle. A loaded handgun was found in the SUV. Grimsley is on administrative leave. A former Newton police officer is scheduled to be sentenced December 28th for driving drunk and having a weapon in his pickup. 30-year-old Dustin Hamill pleaded guilty to both charges. Authorities say Hamill was off duty when he was pulled over on August 30th on Interstate 80 between Mitchellville and Colfax. His blood later tested out at nearly three times the legal alcohol limit. And authorities say he had a loaded handgun and unopened cans of beer in his truck. Hamill has since left the Newton police force, which he had joined in 2012. Authorities are investigating a Des Moines house fire that injured three firefighters. The Des Moines Register said the fire is believed to have started in the attic of the house Thursday night. The house was split into five apartments, all of which had occupants. Des Moines Fire Department spokesman Brian O'Keefe said one firefighter was injured when he fell through an opening in the attic roof to the third floor below. A second dislocated his shoulder moving fire equipment. A third firefighter was injured when the house's ceiling collapsed. None of the injuries was considered to be life-threatening, and no other injuries were reported. Lieutenant Governor Kim Reynolds says that she and Governor Branstad have an excellent working relationship and that she's prepared to take over as the state's chief executive when Branstad leaves to become the U.S. ambassador to China.
I can tell you that not a lot of lieutenant governors have the opportunity to really be recognized as a full partner. And so that's not been lost on me, the opportunity that I've had. And when he asked me to run Kay, he said, we're going to run as a team and serve as a team. And he really has been true to his word, and I appreciate it.
Reynolds spoke Friday afternoon with Radio Iowa News Director O.K. Henderson. An outline for the transition of power is being developed, but there is no due date set for Reynolds to take oath of office and become Iowa's next governor.
You know, the governor is still the governor until, you know, President-elect Trump isn't inaugurated until January 20th, and then we'll start to work through. We'll be putting a process in place between now and then, of course, and kind of an outline of how that transition will take place. We're looking at what's happened in Iowa and other states, but we have some time to really implement that, and so we'll be forthcoming with more details soon.
Reynolds said she's working with Branstad and the entire team in his office to put together a package of recommendations for the 2017 legislative session, and it will be Branstad who will deliver the condition of the state message to legislators in early January and present a state budget outline for the coming year.
Once he, you know, assumes he's confirmed by the United States Senate as the next ambassador to China, then at that point we'll take a look at, you know, where we're at and move forward from there.
As for whether Reynolds might make significant personnel changes in state government, she says this is just the second day after confirmation of Branstad's exit and her elevation to the governorship.
We have had a phenomenal team, and no one individual does this alone. You know, you set a broad vision, you set four aspirational goals, and then you give them the flexibility and the latitude to implement them. And that drives innovation, that drives, you know, them really thinking outside of the box and looking for different ways that they can help us accomplish the goals. And gosh, I've seen that in almost every single agency, so I'm really excited about the team that we've put together, and they've done a great job.
Reynolds isn't ready to say who she's considering to invite to be her lieutenant governor once she takes the oath of office and is Iowa's 43rd governor, but she has a lot of individuals on her list.
I want to sit down and talk to them, and I like the partnership role. I will continue that. I think that's beneficial to Iowans. It's beneficial for the consistency and continuity of government to have a lieutenant governor that really understands the role and what the administration and the executive branch, what the responsibilities are. So I will continue that same structure.
Reynolds said she's looking for good chemistry since she will consider her lieutenant to be a governing partner. After 42 previous governors who were men, Iowa's 43rd will be a woman, and Reynolds hints that she'll run as an incumbent in 2018 to become the first woman elected as the state's governor.
Honestly, right now we're preparing for the legislative session and really putting our program together and looking for ways that we can continue building on what we've done, and my goal is to be a part of that for a long, long time.
Reynolds served in local government as the treasurer in Clark County before a two-year stint as a state senator. Then she accepted Branstad's invitation to be his lieutenant governor running mate in 2010. She's the fifth woman in a row to serve as lieutenant governor. Until 2014, when Joni Ernst was elected to the U.S. Senate, only the states of Iowa and Mississippi had never elected a woman as governor or to federal office.
Well, I'm really proud to have the opportunity to be a part of history and to be a part of that.
Not only is Ernst the first female senator from Iowa, but Reynolds points to Linda Upmeyer, who last year became the first woman to serve as Speaker of the Iowa House. Probably the majority of state agency directors are open or are women too, she said, according to Reynolds.
Although I'm proud of that, what I'm most proud of is I think all of them, it was not really about gender, but it was about a passion to serve and to make a difference. And that's what I think is reflected in every one of the individuals that I just named, and that's what I think is really important. So kind of as a side bonus, though, young girls in the state have some wonderful role models.
Reynolds, who is 59, is a native of St. Charles. She and her husband live in Osceola. The news was brought to you by Cass County Health System, Cass County Memorial Hospital in Atlantic. I'm Rick Hansen reporting.